Good day. Welcome to the Corey Morgan Show, my weekly playground to rant, rave, cover some issues, and talk to some interesting people. And today's no exception. We got lots to go on about and do have an interesting person coming on. I've got the leader of the Conservative Party of BC, John Rustad, coming on in a little bit. You know, we don't talk about BC nearly enough. They've got, the way I would put it, is complicated politics over there. There's actually a very strong conservative base in BC, but there's also a very strong left-wing base, and they've got a lot of craziness going on. But the Conservative Party of BC has taken the lead in BC in polling for the first time, I think, since the 60s or something. And we could be seeing some changes in the next BC election. It'll be very interesting to speak to Mr. Rustad about that and see how things are going for a party that's kind of rebuilding from next to nothing. Use that comment scroll. I see you guys checking in there, Mr. Stanley, Jordan, Paradoxy, James. It's good to see that. This is live, Jackie. Get those comments, questions out there. Send them my way. I see them all. I don't necessarily read them all out, but they are important. It keeps things rolling and, you know, you guys think of things to ask that I hadn't thought of before. So I'm going to get off photo with the start of, the subject of this show is been, and what I was hinting at, I mean, there was a recent press conference with Trudeau, and I was just, I'm not even floored by him anymore. So in listening to him, I had to write this up. I mean, as national support for the Trudeau Liberals continues to plummet, Trudeau's become even more unprincipled than ever. And yeah, he was already pretty low while desperation is settling in. The term unhinged, I mean, is often applied to his behavior and actions lately. I mean, he's getting outright weird under the pressure. Now he's hinting at going after the assets of older Canadians in a wealth redistribution scheme that could tear the nation to shreds. It's becoming undeniable. His eye is turning towards the capital tied up in individual home ownership, and he wants a piece of it. So at a recent press event, he was asked about his capital gains tax hike, and he hit a new low as he tried to stoke intergenerational division and envy. I mean, his last desperate hope in maintaining power in the next general election is to somehow regain the support of younger Canadians who fled supporting the Liberal Party. The rising cost of living has been hammering everybody, but it's been particularly tough on young people. Many economic pressures have been exacerbated due to years of terrible policies, under the Liberals, from government debt, high taxes, low productivity, mass immigration, of course. The dream of home ownership for most young Canadians has been shattered. But rather than try and fix the problems of his own creation, Trudeau's trying to shift the blame to Canada's older generation and the wealth they've accumulated over a lifetime of work. But hey, don't take my word for it. Let's listen to the words of Trudeau on his own, or at least I'll read them out. He said, "Older generations whose money works for them rather than working hard as young people are." Like, this is what he was talking about. He's going after those older generations who are just sitting on mounds of money and not working. They're lazy, they're slothful, while young people are working and slaving. That's what he's saying. He's implying that older Canadians are living the high life on the backs of younger working Canadians. He overlooks the reality that most of the people who currently have savings or home equity gained them through working their asses off and living responsibly for decades of their lives. But he wants to fuel the fires of envy, and he hopes that young people will become angry at prior generations rather than at him. The hypocrisy and irony are pretty outstanding in this tactic. I mean, it's being used by a trust fund baby who likely has never bought his own groceries in his life, much less had to worry about buying a home, paying rent, or saving for retirement. But he didn't stop there. No, Trudeau went on to say he wants to somehow tilt the economy to favor a different generation. And again, these are his words. He said he wants to make sure people who have done the best over the past years in a society and an economy that's tilted slightly towards them actually gets retilted towards young people. I know it's an awkward word salad, but again, remember, it's Trudeau. This guy's brain damaged. But basically, he's saying he wants to retilt the economy to fit a certain age demographic. Well, how do you do that? He's hinting at a massive wealth redistribution scheme. The subject at hand is his capital gains tax hike, but even Trudeau must know it won't raise him the sort of funds he wants. Capital gains taxes are proven economy killers. They never bring in the revenue that proponents expect. There is a giant pool of capital out there, though, and it's hanging like a plum, and it's teasing and tempting the spendthrift prime minister. And that pool is the home equity of mature Canadians. If he could just tap it, he'd be able to spend hundreds of billions trying to bind the electoral love of young Canadians. The Liberal government's been poking around the notion of taxing equity of primary households for years. The CMHC is a branch of the government, and it's repeatedly commissioned studies on how to tax the home equity of Canadian residences, the primary residences. They've given hundreds of thousands of tax dollars to an activist named Paul Kershaw, who's been lobbying for a home equity tax for years. Kershaw referred to homeowners as lottery winners who didn't earn their wealth. Yeah, he plays right into those politics of envy. Trudeau liked Kershaw's work so much, he invited Kershaw to speak at a Liberal cabinet retreat on Prince Edward Island last August. I mean, Kershaw's only a one-trick pony on this issue. The only reason you would have him speak to your cabinet is to try and sell the cabinet on the merits of a home equity tax. Guys, when there's smoke, there's fire. It would appear to be political suicide for the Trudeau Liberals to enrage homeowners by making a grab for their equity. But it has to remember the Liberal reign is already terminal in the polls. If they don't do something radical, they face electoral obliteration. They have nothing to lose. And nothing's more dangerous than an animal when it's cornered. Trudeau's twitchy second-in-command, Chrystia Freeland, mused about unleashing the massive mountain of excess cash. Those are her words in Canadian households during a BNN interview. Again, was it an equity tax she's hinting at? Creating intergenerational angst is a vulgar way to try and retain power. Yet Trudeau's going there without hesitation. Don't think he's desperate and deranged. If you don't think he's desperate and deranged enough to go after the home equity of Canadians, just watch him. Think of that old quote, an evil man will burn his own nation to the ground to rule over the ashes. It's misattributed to Sun Tzu, but nobody knows quite who said it. But I mean, it's valid and it's a good one and it really does apply. Hang on, folks. He's coming for it. All right, let's see what else is going on out there in the news. I got that out of my system and talk to our news editor, Dave Naylor. There he is. How's it going, Dave?
Hey, it's going well, Corey. How are you?
All right.
Good. All right. Did you lose any trees out at the Prudis compound with that huge wind the last day or two?
The wind didn't do it, but a whole bunch of them came down when the snow did last week. So, yeah, I've had a lot of chainsaw work to go lately. It really wreaked havoc on our forest out there.
Yeah, it's a shame. Hey, I just had a chance to look through your new book. Congratulations. It looks fantastic.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was a labor of love, I tell you. You know, speaking of Trudeau, just he has so many brilliant quotes out there. I figured somebody's got to document these, you know, sooner rather than later, so everybody can enjoy everything that Justin said over the last 15 years.
Oh, when does it go on sale?
It's already on sale, actually. Yeah, it's up on Amazon. It's called Moistly Speaking.
All right, shameless plug over. Shall we move on with the headlines?
Sure, let's get on with that then. Thanks.
We got some good stuff on the website this morning, Corey. We're leading off with your show, of course, but right underneath it, we've got a strange admission from presidential candidate RFK. He says a worm ate part of his brain. I guess that could explain some of his actions, but the story is there for your enjoyment. Elon Musk has piped in with an online conversation with Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. They're talking about the Trudeau Online's Harm Act. And Elon Musk described it as absolutely insane. So he knows what he's talking about, I think, there. It's Back to the Future for Future to the Back for Calgary Retirement Home. They're bringing back COVID-19 restrictions after an outbreak there. They've got three of their residents have been found to have coronavirus, and they're bringing back the heavy rules, masking and all that sort of good stuff. Everybody's favorite environment minister, Stephen Guilbeault, has now decided he's going to target truckers and the emission from the trucks. You know, they not only keep the country running, but they do provide a good amount of emissions, and Guilbeault is going to target them. So God help them in the future. Still the top story on the website, and has been for the last 18, 19 hours, is the fact AstraZeneca withdrew their COVID-19 vaccine because it was causing injuries, basically. So that's got everybody up in arms and wondering about the safety of their injections. We've got a good column from respected University of Calgary economist Jack Mintz on some unfair rules about taxation. And the head of the CBC yesterday was in front of a committee and of the Commons and was accused of basically lying about CBC bonuses and trying to cover them up. And the last piece of political news I'll leave you with, Corey, is the NDP is back pushing their universal basic income. It's only a program that would cost $88 billion a year. So you know what? Trudeau's so nuts these days, he may go for it. And the government of Alberta has just appointed a new ethics commissioner. Check back in the site in about 5 minutes and you'll find out who it is.
Right on. Well, we'll don't check back in 5 minutes, guys. Wait till after the show. It'll still be up there. I got a lot of ranting and turning of your ear. But thanks, Dave. Appreciate the update, and I'll see you after the show.
Thanks, Corey.
Right on. That is our news editor, Dave Naylor. As you can see, loads and loads of stories from all sorts of people up there. And this one, I like to remind you guys, the reason we can do that is because you guys have been subscribing. We don't take tax dollars. We pride ourselves on that, and it allows us to stay independent. So if you haven't subscribed yet, get on there, guys. WesternStandard.news/subscription. Take out a membership. It's $10 a month, $100 for a year. Again, just like a newspaper subscription. And it's even better in the old days of newspapers. I mean, we update this stuff as it happens. As Dave said, stuff's coming up in 5 minutes there. So if you haven't subscribed yet, get on there and take care of it, guys. Or share it with other people. Get them to subscribe. Let's keep independent media going. If you've already subscribed, thank you very much. I really do appreciate it, of course. And that is really the top story. You know, all these years, AstraZeneca now admitting, yeah, I guess the vaccine perhaps is a little dangerous. Perhaps it's hurting more people than it's helping. I mean, you don't pull it off the market unless you got a pretty good idea it's not performing how you would like, to say the very least. And proving a lot of people right who had misgivings when this was rushed through during the periods of COVID. You know, the damage done, not just by the authoritarian approach to COVID, the way they shoved it down everybody's throats. It's funny, people get upset with me because I made no bones about it. I was traveling to the States. I went out, I got vaccinated. I got two of them. Never bothered with the boosters after that, but I got my minimum. I was always, though, always against mandates, against pressuring people, whether employers pressuring people or whether it was schools or whether forcing people to show a passport to get into a place of business or a restaurant, always heavily opposed to that. Because coerced consent isn't consent. You know, this debate we still have to this day, unfortunately, but it's the truth. A person could say no, but some person to say no to a vaccine they might not want to have could entail losing your job, losing the ability to travel, losing the ability for your children to participate in some sports, being socially ostracized. I mean, they really played that up a lot, didn't they? Not being able to go out to restaurants. No, that's not consent, guys. And it's funny when you talk about the pressures employers can put on employees. You know, you don't get any more personal than a medical procedure. And let's talk about medical procedures. I mean, one is abortion, right? Some people have some very strong views on that one, on one side or another. What if it was an employer who was one side or another who wanted to know the health status of their female employees and felt that that employer should be able to fire one of those female employees, whether they made a choice one way or another when it came to an abortion? Well, people would be outraged. Well, I don't think getting a vaccination is necessarily as intrusive or personal as determining the fate of a baby, but it's the same principle, guys. I mean, that's not consent. That's not a way to do things. And now it's caught up. And now the backfiring, the thing that I'm kind of upset about, we're hearing about whooping cough coming back up again, measles. You know, vaccinations that we knew were effective and were safe enough prior to all this. But the problem is the way the government dealt with it, the way the authoritarians came down on people, trust was shattered. And now we have people not vaccinating their children with known safe vaccines. And we're getting the vaccination numbers are lower than ever from people choosing not to. And kids are going to suffer. They're going to get things like mumps and that we just didn't need to get anymore. And again, it's due to governments breaking the trust. If you don't have faith in the government to push you the right way when it comes to, or encourage you when it comes to medical choices, you're not going to listen to them any longer. So, seeing AstraZeneca backing off on this now, finding out that perhaps the harm is more dangerous than the benefit of that vaccine, people are really, really going to be strongly reevaluating things. And again, it was pushed down people. Paradoxy saying, yeah, he lost his job twice for refusing to get any jabs. We lost people in the military. We've had Mike on to talk about that a couple of times. It just cornered people. We had health care workers, of course, who lost their positions and jobs because they refused to take part in that. And it's just not right. All right, so let's get on. And I'm looking forward to this. I haven't for a while. As I said, we don't talk about BC nearly enough. They're our next door neighbor. They have a lot of fantastic conservative people over there. And they have some of the most interesting, if unpredictable politics in the country. They always have. I mean, it's just been something to watch. And now it looks like we're going to see some potentially really positive change coming out of BC. And it's through the Conservative Party of BC. So let's talk to their leader, John Rustad, and see what's going on over there. Hello, Mr. Rustad. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on today.
So as I was kind of saying on the way in, I mean, a lot of our listeners are already familiar with what's happening over there, but a lot aren't. The Conservative Party of BC has been around for a long, long time, but it's only in recent history where you guys have sort of brought it into, viability again. In fact, you're actually looking to be leading in the polls in BC now.
Yeah, the Conservative Party of British Columbia has been around since 1903 and governed for many years, but it hasn't formed a government since 1927. And it hasn't elected anybody in British Columbia since the 1970s. So it's been a party that's been in wilderness for a very long time. But what we're seeing in British Columbia, since 1991, we've had 16 years of BC Liberal and 17 years of NDP, and people are looking for change. They're looking for a different approach in British Columbia, and that's what the Conservative Party of British Columbia is providing them with.
So BC United is sort of, well, it's where a lot of you within the Conservative Party now came from. There's been sort of a rift and I guess a regrowth in it. I'm very familiar with that. I was very active in the Wildrose Party in Alberta when sort of we had our battle with the Progressive Conservatives and the Wildrose came out of that. Though I have to ask, I mean, the side effect we found, unfortunately, was getting an accidental NDP government for a term. How do you, approach people when they express that fear when you're splitting a conservative vote?
You know, that's been a challenge in British Columbia. British Columbia has always sort of been a two-party system. They've always had, whether it was the Social Credit and the NDP, whether it was the BC Liberals and the NDP. However, what we've seen is the BC Liberals, or now they call themselves the United Party, has really lost the confidence of the people in the province. So they're looking for change. And that's what we're trying to do with the Conservative Party of British Columbia, is to be a big tent party. And like I always like to say, it's not about being conservative or liberal or NDP or green for that matter. It's just about standing for what's right and doing what's right for the people and fighting for the average everyday person. And so we're drawing people from across the spectrum. There still is a risk, of course, with the United Party. There's still a support base for the United Party, but we are leading now in the polls. And our hope is that we can continue to consolidate the people in this province that are looking for change, that are looking for common sense, to be able to bring them together and provide that good government for British Columbia.
And it's been refreshing to hear a voice for common sense coming out in the legislature there that needed that voice for a long time. You'd proposed a private member's bill. You don't get many opportunities when you're in a small minority, so you have to choose carefully, but one that made sense to most people when it talking about government-funded sports and just making sure that it remains fair for everybody to participate. Alberta actually is now brought in a similar policy. A lot of European countries have. But unfortunately, it got shot down before first reading in the legislature.
Yeah, it was a simple little bill, but it was a first in Canada to be introduced in the legislature, which was a bill just to bring fairness for women and girls in sports. And basically what the bill does is to say that biological men should not be competing with women and girls in sports. And it makes sense. I mean, there's obviously physiological differences between male and female. But more than that, women have struggled to be identified as a person. They struggled to be identified to have the right to vote. They struggled to be able to enter into places. They've struggled for equal pay. And now they have to struggle for fairness in sports. It's crazy. That's why this bill was brought in, just to say enough of this nonsense, is bring it back to common sense. And quite frankly, we also need to make sure that we have safe spaces for women to be able to go, change rooms, washrooms, these types of things as well. It's an approach that we think is just the right thing to do in British Columbia, which is why we introduced that bill.
Well, that's it. And people have gone so far beyond common sense on this. I mean, there's trans individuals. Nobody wants to attack them or harm them, but we just have to ensure that, the activists have really overstepped reality in a lot of things when it came to sport, when it came to women's safety in washrooms, or even cases of women's shelters. And we've had some dangerous biological men put in with women who have been assaulted by other men in the past. It was a terrible notion. Nobody was speaking up for them. So another issue that you've been speaking with our own Linda Slobodian on, it's been a bizarre one going on out in BC with a 14-year-old girl who's been performing apparently in some pretty explicit circumstances on stages in BC. They say she's trans, but she's also autistic and has some other challenges. And I mean, this is just beyond the pale. You had stated that you were going to look into things and see if this is, there should be something the authorities can step in on. Have you had any progress with this?
So I have looked into this. I haven't had a chance to talk to the minister directly about it. The issue really is that if you're under 16, you're not allowed to work in BC. This is, I think, the labor laws that are in place, unless there's special circumstances associated with farming. And so there's those laws in place. But there's also where you have an adult entertainment, you know, you have to be of age to be able to perform there as well. And so there's something going on here, and I don't know why police haven't looked into it. And I don't know why, you know, the ministry hasn't looked into this either. It's one of those things that, you know, you kind of go like, how did this happen? So, you know, I may not be completely up with the laws. So it's things that I need to follow up with, which is why I want to follow up with the minister. But to me, this doesn't seem right.
Well, yeah, it does seem absurd. But again, I think some of it just comes of that fear of the activists. A lot of people just don't want to speak up because they don't want to get in the middle of it. But when we see a child potentially victimized, I don't know what sort of man would want to sit around and watch we know what sort of man would want to watch a 14-year-old girl in such a circumstance. Like, this is beyond, you know, somebody who's just dressed up and reading at a drag queen story hour. Okay, it's a bit clownish, a little different. This is sexualized dancing in front of people. People want to hear that, again, at least somebody's investigating and speaking up and getting to the bottom of it and see what the heck is going on there.
Yeah, like I say, I mean, we need to make sure that we protect girls and boys. We need to protect underage people. We need to make sure that as a province, we're just standing for common sense and standing for what's right. And so, you know, if there's a situation like this that's been described, obviously, there's been stories and stuff about it. This is something certainly that should be looked into. I think the police should be looking into this as to why this is being allowed to happen.
So another big issue that's been happening has been sort of the back and forth. I guess points to the BC government for at least realizing that the decriminalization experiment was just an abject failure. It's unfortunate that so many people had to suffer in an experiment that turned out to be a failure. But they've asked the Trudeau Liberals to back off on the decriminalization. That's a good step. I mean, just at least admitting that you make a mistake moves you towards finding a solution. And it's a very large and complex problem, though. I mean, it's certainly top of news in every Western Canadian city. What does the Conservative Party have in mind to try and deal, though, with this addiction crisis? Because, of course, it's still happening.
Yeah, the addiction crisis is absolutely, you know, ballooned in this province. We have, according to some experts, we now have the highest level of addictions per capita anywhere in North America in British Columbia. I find that completely unacceptable. And when you look at the experiment with decriminalization, with the experiment with safe supply, clearly they are not working. We have more addicts. We have more drug problems. We've got more crime problems. The so-called safe supply drugs are finding their ways into our schools. They're creating the next generation of addicts. All of this needs to change. And I think, quite frankly, the steps that David Eby and the NDP have taken to reduce the decriminalization haven't gone far enough. We should be eliminating decriminalization entirely. These are hard drugs. They do serious damage to people. Doctors are telling me that people doing these street drugs today, within 2 to 3 years, have permanent brain damage. We've got to bring this to an end. Same with the safe supply. We've got to bring it to an end. We've actually got to get a place in British Columbia where we are trying to get people into recovery, where we're trying to get them back into a normal life. And we're providing those kind of supports with a wide range, as opposed to just trying to keep people on drugs. It's not the right approach. We need to change it.
Absolutely. So that's one of the issues you've got. I mean, it's a very pressing issue in the urban areas. And actually, it's getting, you know, smaller towns and such are dealing with the addiction as well, and more rural spots. But I see a similar pattern in BC to Alberta. We got a very sharp urban-rural divide in, I guess you could say, political leanings, ideology. How could you balance, the need for principled conservative positions, but still being pragmatic enough to make sure you represent enough for, say, lower mainland voters to form the government you need?
Well, really, when you look across British Columbia, it is very diverse. There's various areas, and you can look at all kinds of differences as saying, you know, you need to be focused on one group or another. But I tell you, it doesn't matter whether you're in urban or whether you're in rural BC, you all have the same issues. We all have the same issues of affordability. People are struggling just to put food on the table, to be able to pay their rent. They don't have an opportunity to be able to buy a house or even put away for a future. Similarly with healthcare, people are struggling to find doctors. People are struggling to find healthcare. People, you know, right across the province are facing issues, you know, a crisis, quite frankly, in crime and addictions. There are many things that we all have in common, and we just want to get back to a government that is just going to try to do the best they can for people, as opposed to being focused on ideology. So I'm, you know, we always talk about the divides, but I think, quite frankly, if we stay focused on making sure that we're fighting for the average everyday person, it goes across the political boundaries that we have within any province like British Columbia.
Right. So it looks like you're roughly about 7 months away, I believe, from the next general election. You know, you got some great momentum, but of course, that's still forever away in the world of politics. I mean, hopefully that momentum continues. One of the issues that is certainly still clearly an adversarial relationship with the BC United. Yourself, you came from the Liberals initially, and you've had a person cross the floor. Are you considering taking in, or are there people looking to cross the floor that maybe make the Conservative Party a larger entity before you hit the election?
Well, we have been in talks with MLAs from the United Party for many months now. We tried reaching out to the United Party in general. We were rebuffed twice from them. You know, we're still open to having a conversation, but we're 135 days away from the writ being dropped. You know, there isn't a lot of time left to be able to do big things between the two parties. And it's unfortunate. Would it be nice if we could have done something, you know, and we're still open to having conversations. But at the end of the day, we need to be prepared for an election. We need to make sure we have our candidates in place. We need to raise the money. We need to be getting our platform. We need to be getting out there. And we can't be wasting time, you know, having discussions with a party, quite frankly, that seems to be unrealistic and not accepting of the change that is happening in British Columbia.
Yeah, and it was unfortunate that you would think that ideologically you'd be aligned, but with that private members bill you put forward, unfortunately, the BC United was just as opposed to it as the NDP was, which again shows that they're more concerned about political expediency rather than political principle, and that's always frustrating to see.
Well, I'll just give you some examples. We want to eliminate the carbon tax. It makes no sense whatsoever. Taxing people into poverty is not going to change the weather. You know, and what is the United Party doing? Well, they want to stop the increase, but they're not prepared to eliminate the carbon tax. You know, we want to support parents' choice. We need to get rid of things like sexualization of our children in schools. We need to make sure that, you know, our schools have good anti-bullying programs, but get refocused on academics. They don't support our position on that. Similarly, where we want to be able to have fairness for women and girls in sports. There are a number of issues that the United Party is not quite prepared to go to where we are, which creates some big differences. And so it's kind of like if you want NDP light, you get the United Party. If you want NDP, you got the NDP. But if you want, you know, a common sense approach to governing, that's where the Conservative Party comes in British Columbia.
And it certainly appears that people are appreciating just the unapologetic conservative approach to things. As I said kind of earlier, too, there are a lot of conservatives in BC. People in Alberta forget that, but there's a lot of common sense people there. They just, due to those complicated politics, haven't always been well represented. So you've really got your work cut out in this 7 months. How have things been going in the, you know, nominations and getting candidates in place and getting ready for the next campaign?
We've got about 60 candidates in place now. We've got another 25 or so that we're going to have in place in the next few weeks, I think, depending on how some of these nomination processes go. So we're not going to have any problem with filling our slate. I mean, we've had one riding on the island, for example, where 19 people have expressed interest in running in the riding, which creates for a very interesting challenge. But, you know, there's interest right across this province, and people are excited about what we are doing with the Conservative Party of British Columbia. So we're going to continue to go around. We're going to continue to build the momentum and the grassroots movement for this province. And I think, you know, it's going to be interesting. And I'm really proud of the people that have stepped up to the plate, too. I mean, think about it. It's not easy for people to step up to the plate to a party that hasn't elected anybody since the 1970s. But we have, you know, former mayors. We've got counselors. We've got school trustees. We've got business people. We've got farmers. We've got lawyers. We've got doctors. We've got nurses, we've got people from right across the political spectrum, all of British Columbia, that have decided to put their life on hold and step up to the plate and say, yes, we want to try to change things in British Columbia. We want to bring common sense back.
Well, there does definitely seem to be an appetite to see some common sense coming back into the BC legislature. I just as we get towards the end, to clarify, like, you're the Conservative Party, you know, and in a Venn diagram, you'd have a lot of federal members who happen to be, but there's no formal relationship between your party and the federal entity, right?
No, there isn't any formal relationship. Obviously, there's lots of overlap between our structure and the federal conservative structure. But, you know, we have, for example, a lot of NDP, provincial NDP people coming over and joining us. We've got one former NDP MLA running for us. We have people from the Liberal Party of Canada that have come and joined us and that are running for us. So we're drawing from across the political spectrum. And it's really because, you know, we're just trying hard just to focus on doing what's right. So it's not just about an ideology of a political party, but trying to reach across the spectrum. Because at the end of the day, people in the province, they're just looking to be able to have a quality of life for both them and an opportunity for their children. And when their children can't afford to live in the province and are looking at leaving the province, people are saying, wait a second, this is wrong. We need change in this province. And that's what we're trying to struggle for and to present to people in BC.
Well, really looking forward to seeing you guys continuing with the momentum you got. I love hearing your messaging. Before I let you go, then, where can our viewers in BC find your party and find their local representative or nomination races and such so they can help you guys get in there?
Best place to go is conservativebc.ca. That's our website. It connects to all of our candidates as well as the things that are going on. And of course, we've got significant social media presence for all of our candidates as well as as well as for the party. So, you know, reach out, be part of the movement, be part of change, be part of making history in British Columbia. It's a grassroots movement that I'm very proud people are joining. We're being, making significant progress in this province. And I really believe, you know, we've got a very good chance to form government. We'll certainly be challenged for government in October. It's going to be a very exciting next 5 months.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Mr. Rusted. We'll be watching closely. I hope we can talk again soon, perhaps as the campaign starts to unfold. And hopefully we can see some conservative neighbors off to our west side. We're looking forward to it.
It would be nice. There's so much that we can do across this country. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you. So, yes, that was Conservative Party of British Columbia leader John Rusted. And, yeah, these guys are coming out with... It's just common sense. It's just conservative policy. They aren't reinventing the wheel. They're just providing one to people who haven't had access to one in a long time. And BC citizens are embracing it. Like, we do forget, when you look to lower mainland BC, even, you know, the left coast, as people call it, there's more of a conservative base down there than people realize sometimes. You think back to the reform days when it was really conservative, and that's what I mean with the complicated nature of BC politics. You could have a Reform Party member of parliament right next to an NDP member of parliament, right next to a Liberal member of parliament, all within a few square miles of high-density area in lower mainland BC. So it's a volatile political atmosphere down there. But I mean, they are suffering. They're suffering with the opioid addiction. They're suffering with affordability, you know, in ways that we can't even imagine. And they're suffering from, yeah, some of the bizarreness, wokeness, and perversion, as we see with the situation with that girl has been put on stage in front of a bunch of perverts repeatedly. And again, check it out on westernstandard.news. Linda Slobodian's been covering it excellently. She's following this. She's a dog with a bone. She won't let it go. And the only party leader who has been speaking up on that in BC has been John Rusted. The others all, you know, they're ducking for cover. Come on. This shouldn't be a partisan issue. They're kids. They're kids. They don't belong strip dancing on stages. This kid's mother has got something wrong with her. And as Mr. Rusted said, you don't even, though we should have some laws just for the sake of decency to not have children on stage like that. As he's pointing out, anyways, it's illegal for a kid to be working at that age. Step one, there's one immediate legal recourse you could have to say, we're shutting this down. This is not happening anymore. Get that child off the stage. As Slobodian says, as you can see with that headline there that Nico put up, Slobodian, send in the police and child protective services. Why are we waiting? It's true. Why are we waiting? The fear of the woke activists, the trans activists. I'm not talking about trans people. I'm talking about the activists because those are two completely different things. They really are. And these are the activists, the kooks that put this sort of stuff out there. And people on the left, many, many, many of them are just as disgusted with this as people on the right. They might want a leftist government in a lot of ways and big unions and big spending, but they still value their children. And they want somebody to speak up and say, hey, this is wrong. Get that child off the stage and away from those perverts. And they don't care who's going to say it. So if Mr. Rusted is the only one with the courage to call it out, yeah, that's part of why. A party that, again, hasn't had much support in decades is now in the lead in BC over the NDP, even while splitting a bit of the vote with the BC United Party. And as the BC United Party appears more and more cowardly, their support's going to drop. People want unapologetic, principled conservatism, even if they don't agree with every policy. One of the things that the BC United, before they changed their name to the Liberals, I mean, Aaron Gunn was looking to run for them for the leadership, and they punted him out from even being allowed to run. This isn't the way a conservative party that values, you know, democracy and bottom up sort of things operates. But that's what's happening. So yes, as he said, they're more of an NDP light. I'm looking forward to them growing. So yeah, just the poll I was referencing, and you can find the whole thing on the Western Standard online as well. Right now, anyways, and again, that's a long way, and this is far from certain. The Conservatives right now, though, are poised to win 31%. And that's a majority of the votes. We've got to remember, with first past the post, that could be distributed all sorts of ways. They would win the popular vote, but they might not win the majority of seats, especially when you're looking at 31%. The NDP are only a few points behind them, I believe. And then you've got the BC United, and they're way back, I think, at 12 or 18%. So they're really fading. But you see, that leaves a lot of room to growth. I mean, I think with some of the common sense coming out from the Conservatives in BC, they can pull some more of those NDP supporters. They'll pull some. There are swing people who actually swing between NDP and Conservative parties. They exist. And they certainly, there's the poll numbers up there, can take a good bite out of the BC United Party. It looks like, yeah, they're 16%. And that's a lot of room for the Conservative Party of BC to grow. The Green Party, of course, is taking 12%, and that eats the NDP a lot. And James is saying 37. Yes, I appreciate the correction, James. I got that number wrong. I had it as 31. I guess it depends on which way you're measuring it, too. It could be decided, undecided. But either way, it's definitely, they're in winning conditions, but it's vulnerable, and it's a long ways from over the finish line yet. But it's pretty exciting to watch that, and glad to see it coming along. So let's talk about something that's not so good to see coming along, or maybe it's mixed. Catherine Tate. Ah, yes, this is the headline from Black Loxing. I'm not a liar, she's saying, but she is a liar. She is a liar. She's the CEO of the CBC. Yeah, the corporate head of a big, giant socialist organ for the Liberal Party is really what they are. She makes $500,000 a year. Sorry, $497,000 a year. And she denies that she was misleading the Heritage Committee over the payment. They laid off a whole pile of CBC people, even though they get, what, $1.4 billion a year? Even though they steal hundreds of millions of dollars from the advertising market and the private sector, they still can't manage to operate and pay the bills and keep their own people employed. So they laid off a whole bunch, even though they were getting more bailouts, more money, more and more money. And lo and behold, it turns out that they got 14.9 million in bonuses went to their executives. Good work, Ms. Tate. Good work. I'm glad she came out from her New York loft to speak in Canada to the behavior of her CBC and pretend she's a victim, pretend she's being ill-treated. You're running a crap corporation. The CBC cannot be defunded fast enough. Of all the things I'm hoping for, if Pierre Poilievre becomes our next prime minister, please, please, please follow through and defund that dinosaur, terrible, biased organization called the CBC. We do not need them. They're just robbing us. Civil servants are robbing us all over the place. But the CBC is a special bunch. And let's see, other stories. Here's another one. Yeah, Cabinet learned a lot. This is from the Addictions Minister, Yara Sachs. Says, we learned a lot from the decriminalization experiment in BC. You know, there's things you didn't have to learn. You give a whole bunch of free drugs, and that's part of the safe supply. So I know it's tied in with decriminalization, but it's all tied in. Give a bunch of free drugs to a bunch of addicts, and guess what? You get more addicts. I mean, you get some fewer addicts because they're still overdosing, dying all over the place. But this way, they spawn and spread, and you get more and more added to the mix. It's a growing problem. Yes, it was a failure. Everybody was already saying that before you hammerheads did this. It came at the cost of countless lives. People who haven't died yet, but they're going to, because they got addicted with this crap as more and more spread everywhere. I understand. Look, chasing around some, you know, poor addicted soul who's on the street corner who was just has a little bit of meth on him in the corner isn't the way you're going to address the problem. Absolutely. Throwing him in jail or finding him, waste of time. Even going after the small level dealers. But you've got to maintain some ability for intervention. And as long as that's illegal, there are means you can intervene with. As soon as you decriminalize it and make it like, oh, you can carry some cocaine or meth or heroin or fentanyl around with you with nothing to worry about, guess what happens? They carry more cocaine, meth, fentanyl, and that with them. That's what happens. And it happened at a terrible cost. And you know, she's still talking in circles. Oh, we learned a lot of lessons. Yeah, you sure did, didn't you? And she's saying is decriminalization is still one tool of many. Now, you're a tool. You're a fool. Get out in the streets. Get out there. Really, walk. Go to East Hastings. Have a look around. You know, smell the urine. Watch the walking dead wandering around down there. Look at the predatory dealers on every street corner. Look at the young people prostituting themselves. Look at them losing bowel control behind dumpsters at the age of 17 because they're addicted to meth and fentanyl. And you think that enabling it is going to help this, you tool? No, it's not. Let's get real. Even Oregon figured it out, and now BC's starting to figure it out. Unfortunately, you know, this isn't like an economic experiment that's failing. This is a social experiment, and it's coming at the cost of a lot of lives. There's no easy solution. Like I said, chasing them around and trying to find people and so on isn't going to work either. They need treatment. They need facilities. They need somewhere to go. When the time comes that they're ready for it or they've been so far out of control that you can bring them in, get them in, but they need somewhere to go, and they don't have anywhere to go right now. So, yeah, it's like expecting cancer patients to cure themselves, guys. They need the help, but it's not going to happen. Speaking of parasites, Canada Post. Yes, they've been making the news lately. Yeah, you remember, they're still around. $748 million in pre-tax loss in their latest annual report. So they're getting up towards $1 billion a year lost. We've really, this is another one of those hangovers from Trudeau. There was a big move to at least get rid of all the home delivery from Canada Post because it's terribly expensive. We don't need it, guys. Most of what you get in your mailbox, and you know it, is flyers and junk mail. Our bills have gone electronic. Most of our communications with others have gone electronic. And products and things that we buy online typically come through private delivery services, whether it's Amazon or any of the others. Paying these exceptionally well-paid postal delivery people. I mean, Seinfeld made fun of them back in the 90s with the American ones, and there's truth to it. Come on, we've always known that. Your flyer delivery people who are making professional-grade remuneration for your job. And good for you. That's fine, but it's done. It's over. The fax machine was the beginning of the end of your trade. And now it's getting up to $748 million a year in losses. In other words, losses for them means it comes out of us, guys. We're tax subsidizing a dinosaur. They can go with the CBC. Cut it out. We don't need them anymore. And here's another beauty. Climate emissions. Guess what? They've gone up. Kill surprise. How did this happen? Gilbo brought in a carbon tax. We banned bags in Calgary for a little while. Finally got rid of that, by the way. Banned paper bags. Yeah, paper bags. And somehow, emissions are still going up. How can this be? Haven't we saved the world yet? Do we need to carbon tax harder? Of course not. We need to face reality. Part of the reality, too, of course, is we've got these liberals bringing in over 1 million people a year into the country. Guess what? They emit stuff. Whether they're driving, taking the bus, living in a home just like everybody else, as they should be able to, well, they're farting. It brings up the emissions. So we can't tax ourselves into being the world's saviors, despite Gilbo's best wishes. The carbon tax has failed. So it's going up. But what are the words out of Gilbo? He says, we're making steady progress. This is his words. They're delusional. These liberals are out of it. He says, it's imperative we keep up the momentum. Well, the momentum, Mr. Gilbo, is having rising emissions. So you want to keep making them grow? You're failing there, Mr. Gilbo. And let's see. Well, yes. So John Nichol, a doctor, saying genius thinks paper bags save the environment, costs and weighs much more than plastic. I understand that. You know, we can have a discussion. I'd like to talk about that more. I mean, a roll of plastic bags, really, for the amount of materials that come up in plastic bags, disposable bags, is next to nothing. You can have 1,000 plastic bags, thin ones on a roll. They take up nearly nothing. The problem with plastic bags is they're visible. If people don't chuck them out right, they go, you know, blowing across the road and get stuck on fences and they look like crap. That's why they get targeted, because people can see them, but it doesn't mean they're the biggest problem. Improper disposal of them is a problem. And yes, paper, they don't save the environment. No. In fact, we switched to plastic because we were told 20 years ago that we were all evil for using paper bags because it was cutting down all the trees and it was bad for the little bunnies and beavers and everything out in the areas with logging and all that going on. So we had to stop and move on to nice, environmentally safe plastic. But now in Calgary, they said, no, that's not good enough. We have to ban the paper bags too. even though we've spent millions and millions on this composting facility that supposedly will degrade at least these paper bags. No, that wasn't good enough. Crazy Jody Gondek, she's something. And the rest of her goofy council, not all of them, but most of them, grudgingly repealed their stupid law. When you would go to McDonald's or an A&W or wherever and order your meal, get your little half burger thing from A&W, they'd hand it to you because you'd have to pay extra or ask specifically for a bag. Otherwise, you got to hold it all on your lap. If you got a big family in your car, you're just going to have a big pile. That's how stupid it was. But that's how stupid the council is. So they got rid of it yesterday. They did. But boy, kicking and screaming. This isn't about the environment. That's my final point for today. When you listen to idiots like Gilbo, when you look at the crap out of rotten mayors like Jody Gondek and her little council of clowns at the city of Calgary, it's not about the environment. It's about ideology and it's about control. They don't care about the environment, or maybe they do, but they don't care if their policies don't actually address it. So meanwhile, we take on options that are actually more environmentally damaging than the last ones, and we sit here and pretend, as Gilbo is, that we're making steady progress while emissions actually go up. If emissions are a problem, then why are you lying to us and saying you've solved it when clearly you haven't? Because it's about ideology. You got to remember, scratch green, you get, you know, the old term, watermelons for the greenies. It's not about the environment. It's about socialism. And socialism is just a step towards communism, guys. The solution to environmental problems always seems to come back to more socialism. Go figure. All right, that's my time for today. I had a good rant on. Thank you very much for joining me. Be sure to tune into the pipeline later on tonight and share these links, guys. Let's get the traffic going. Let's build the independent media. So, yes, thanks for tuning in today. Tune in next week. I'll have a new guest and a whole bunch more things to talk about, and we'll see you then.